First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. You can find all the latest, download the latest podcast of this show, actually. You can get it all right there if you don't want to go here. So it's all there. As always, call in numbers 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. For you guys that are in the listening queue, make sure you hit that little number 1 on your dial pad and we will bring you on board as soon as possible. And for the rest of you guys, join the live chat and just sign in. You can sign in on Facebook or anything else. Join the live chat, jump in there, and chat away. In the meantime, as always, how are you, Mr. Martin?
Doing all right, Mr. Springton. Like I say, I need another raise with this weather. You know, you're going to get me on the phone or, you know, doing this show when there's, you know, it's 76 degrees, my friend. Come on.
I hear you. I understand. I tell you, I'd love to get me a raise too. Believe me, we both make the same on this show, so yeah, I'm not doing any better than you are. And I own the program. So what do you think about that? That really stinks, don't it? You know, but that's the way it is, man. But we appreciate having you here as always. I tell you, we've always got a lot going on, a lot to talk about, and you know, tonight will be no different. I'm going to start with one story that just really came to me a few minutes ago from our good friends over Stop It, Stop Invisible Taxes, because I think it's reflective once again of just how screwed up government is. We've got a lot of things to get into, but this story is talking about a consulting firm that had put together this reorganization plan for the troubled Louisville Metro Air Pollution Control District. This is by James Bruggers over at the Courier. You know, it's fascinating because this particular consulting firm has also worked for other large companies that, you know, the LMAPCD regulates. So we've got all kinds of potential conflicts of interest. You know, and it's a very fascinating story because Smith Management Group have worked for CNX, Cosmo Cement, all these other places that have been fined, you know, six figures, at least $128,000 since 2003, including almost $90,000 in 2010 for dust control violations. But it's fascinating, the backstory on this, and I'm hoping that our good friend Paul calls in from Stop It, because he has a lot more information on the backstory on this, and I think our listeners really like it. But, you know, no one has said anything about Smith Management Group, you know, having any hand in the Air District Reorganization Plan, but there's a lot of people who are questioning why our city officials, you know, our good friend Mayor Greg Fisher, didn't check to see if Smith Management Group was representing any of these affected businesses, and they still gave him a consulting contract last year. I thought that was very disturbing. And speaking of the devil, Ed, I'm going to bring Paul right in if that's okay.
All right.
And I'll get your comments in just a second.
All right.
Hello, Paul. How are you, sir?
Greetings, gentlemen. How's Tuesday night starting off for you guys, huh?
Well, you know, it's to tell you what, every day starting off a nightmare these days, but so Tuesday won't be any different, but we had great weather today. So hopefully the Air Pollution Control District didn't do anything to stop
great
that.
Yeah, and Martin's bucking for another raise because it's, like I said, cutting into my springtime time now.
Yeah, cutting into your bike time, what you're trying to tell me. But
you know me, springtime time for me, it's not riding a bike in the park. It's like you're cutting into more work for me. So
I understand.
That's
I understand
not what it is.
But I understand.
Well, you being an independent business guy, you are absolutely just loaded with money, and therefore entities such as the Air Pollution Control District can come and make your life as miserable as they want to with their selective enforcement. The story that Ed Springsteen mentioned, there's a couple of interesting angles. Number one, the fact that the Courier-Journal's environmental advocate, and I use it as advocate because he's not just a reporter, he's part and parcel of the environmentalist movement, James Bruggers, writes a story about an apparent conflict of interest, and to bolster his story, he brings to the table testimony from the American Lung Association's Carolyn Embry. Well, Carolyn Embry, a few years ago, was actually a member of the Air Pollution Control District, and Carolyn Embry, while a member of the APCD, was actually, either her or family members, were receiving business from those people who were being cited by the Air Pollution Control District for their vehicle's failure to pass emissions testing. This was tolerated for years, and it was when it was finally outed, Carolyn Embry resigned. But yet, James Bruggers wants to pick on this contract that the Fisher administration let, and yet not one mention of the Carolyn Embry conflict of interest is mentioned, but he cites her as an authority on the subject matter.
Well,
imagine
I thought that was interesting. I thought that was interesting, too, and I tell you, there's something else, and I got to give James Bruggers just a little bit of credit here, because, you know, they asked the mayor about this, and, of course, Chris Pointer, a spokesman for Greg Fisher, said that they didn't really look too deep on that, and that Smith Management Group met the city's qualifications. And he also went on to say that you know, Chris Pointer apparently declined to say that if SMG was working with any other local businesses that fall under this under their district's enforcement. However, Courier-Journal, Gannett owned Courier-Journal, the one we're reading the story from, publisher Wes Jackson confirmed that Gannett, Courier-Journal's parent company, also is an SMG client, and the newspaper paid fines of $97,500 over a three-year period from 2005 to 2007. So, you know, we often talk about how the press is linked to everything, and here's just another link of the insider deal. To Brugger's credit, it made the cut. You know, this wasn't something the Courier would have allowed out there a year ago, but, you know, apparently they are now. But it is interesting that all these people intertwined, and SMG is making all this money, and like you said, you point out Carolyn Embry profiting from failed vehicles at the Vehicle Emission Testing Center that Senator Dan Syme worked to finally rid us of. You know, how deep does this rabbit hole go? Because it seems like every day there's another story, Paul.
It you have to ask the question, when you have the Air Pollution Control District doing what they do, okay, are they a profit center or are they a cost center, number one and number two? And number three, if their primary mission is to prevent air pollution, the fines don't represent any prevention. They simply say, okay, you polluted the air, now you're going to pay us money for polluting the air.
Right.
So this is a government agency that cannot possibly accomplish its mission by the mere act of imposing fines. Yet they tout that all the time as being a wonderful barometer of how well they're doing their job. Well, their job is to keep the air clean. If they're collecting fines, that means they're failing at their job.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with you. I agree.
Well,
Ed Martin,
it's the same contradiction you get with smokers' taxes and stuff. It's like, you know, if in fact you're collecting and revenue is up on smoking, you know, on the smoking taxes, on the tobacco taxes, then are you actually, you know, as you like to say, are you preventing smoking? Are you reducing smoking? Or are you just making it more painful?
Well, you know, that's exactly it. And there's no way that these things are going to deter anything. All this is a revenue stream, bottom line. And it's interesting, too, because some of the changes that are being made, thanks to SMG's findings, apparently they're looking at cutting the staff by about 15%, and reprioritizing things. That raises a big concern, for people like the Sierra Club, because, they're, you know, when you lose 15% of the staff, they're probably going to come out, you know, and cut people that have experience. Just let's say they don't have their bachelor's degree, for example. So they're going to cut out experienced people because they don't have a bachelor's degree. So your enforcement decision is going to be gutted. And then you've got, you know, they're also making all workers reapply for new jobs, for newly drawn up jobs. The city officials are now saying that they're adding qualifications to ensure a higher quality workforce. So when you cut 15% out of there, you're sending all your people out to training for whatever they want to train them to do. You know that when you cut 15% of your staff, you're not going to get as much done. I'm wondering if this isn't a way to almost to some degree gut the Louisville Air Pollution Control District just a little bit, which would be great for some businesses, but what business are they trying to protect from the fines?
Well, with all of what you just stated, Ed, if these kind of problems have been in place for many, many years, then they weren't doing their job all along, were they?
No.
They were simply providing jobs for a bunch of folks who are politically connected or connected to the environmentalist movement, and they're not really solving any of the problems that they are chartered to solve.
Right. Oh,
yeah.
I agree. And then you've
it always begs the question, just like the war on poverty, if you've been at it for so long, why are you still, if you're having success, why are you still fighting it?
Bingo.
Oh, I agree
right,
with you. I agree
right
with
in
you.
The bullseye.
And then you've got Sarah Lynn Cunningham. Everybody knows Sarah Lynn Cunningham. She's director of the Louisville Climate Action Network. She was a whistleblower, won their lawsuit, a few years ago against MSD. And she goes on to say that, you know, we'd really hate to see this agency dismantled into fewer people afraid to do their jobs. And, you know, then she went ahead and pointed out that SMG's own website says that its lobbying work is to stop laws and regulations that negatively impact their clients. So when you look at this, you've got Gannett as their client, the Courier-Journal. You've got the whole, you know, Metro Pollution Air Control District that's their client. All these other people, I mean, these guys are definitely working both sides of the street. How can this not be unethical?
Well, you know, you were going to ask my opinions on it, my thoughts. Hey,
yep.
You know who my law firm that I work with is. And,
yes,
yeah,
I do.
I tell you what, love them or hate them, our representatives, a lot of times if you call them up and it's like, hey, I got this or I got, you know, I need some help with this, our attorneys that we deal with almost all the time, the first thing they say is, well, let me do a conflict background check, you know, to make sure. If I've got a problem, they can say, let us do a conflict check because,
right.
You know, since we don't play both sides of the coin.
Right.
So that's what kills me about this is, is at some point, yes, the government should do some due diligence, and, you know, a simple website search would tell them it might be an issue. But the other end of it is surely there's an industry, you know, as a consulting firm or a legal firm or accounting firm or anything like that, there's got to be an industry code of ethics where, you know, simply playing both sides of an equation, you know, is just got to be frowned upon. As if, you know, that makes me question this consulting firm now. It's like, really, are we doing business with people who knowingly, you know, I say without looking into any associations they're into, but they're knowingly playing both sides. Like,
Hang on. In this particular case, I believe that story went ahead and said that this SMG outfit was not the city's first choice. They actually chose a different company, and when that first choice company started talking with the city government. Apparently, city government wanted a whole bunch of extra stuff thrown into the package for the same price, and the first company said, no thanks, see you later. So they went to SMG as the second, and by the way, there were only two that bid on this package, okay? So SMG is their last choice out of two, and they're kind of, you know, they kind of got to make do with it. So now if you want to raise the specter that the city intentionally poisoned the well with the first company, that's a topic for discussion. But there were only two companies that bid on this thing, okay? So collusion or not, there really wasn't a whole lot of choices here, guys.
Well, that's very true, but at the same time, I mean, come on, you can't work both sides of the fence. You know, and it's really interesting to me, too, because one of the things that Chris Pointer wanted to point out today was that SMG that was hired because the study was going to be done by Scott Smith of SMG, and Smith was chief of staff of Kentucky's environmental cabinet under Republican Governor Ernie Fletcher. So now I guess it's Republic's fault, you know, like it's Bush's fault. Now I guess it's Fletcher's fault. I don't know. I'm trying to figure that one out. But, you know, it is interesting when you look at this story that, you know, you've got all of these different conflicts of interest, and this is a pattern of behavior in Louisville that we consistently talk about that nobody does anything about. So kudos to Bruggers for putting it out there. But, you know, at the same time, you know, this is something that a lot of details were left out, like the Carolyn Embry situation. So, you know, the Courier-Journal is violating Air Pollution Control District, so maybe this is their way. You know, now they're going to get a chance to kind of save when you cut 15% of the staff. Maybe they're not going to get audited as much, you know.
Ed,
I don't know.
Ed, who did Chris Pointer used to work for before he got involved with city government?
I remember him back to Abramson. I don't remember much about him before then. I'm trying to remember right now.
One time, was in service to the Courier Journal.
You know, I'm trying to remember. I think he was. We'll find out before the show's over. I'm curious now. But you know, there's all kinds of things, man. But you know, and that's just another thing that we talk about all the time or have. You know, all these daggone reporters and stuff that continue being bought off by government just to shut them up. You know what I mean? So, that's one of those things you got to look at as well. But it is an interesting paradox, this situation going on. But it's just one of every other paradox that we have to deal with. So, you know, I'm not sure how it's going to work out, but we'll find out in time. In the meantime, we've got all kinds of other things going on. Paul, I'm going to put you back in the queue. Hit the one again if you want to weigh in, okay? I'm getting just a little bit of background noise there, and I'm not sure if it's you or Ed. All right, so let's try that. And, all right, here we go. We also have some other things. All the bridge projects. We continue talking about building the bridges here in Louisville and, you know, in Indiana and everything else, trying to link Indiana to Kentucky, all this other garbage. Turn this thing into monstrous boondoggle. In the meantime, we haven't really been paying much attention to the Milton-Madison Bridge out of U.S. 421. And lo and behold, the Milton-Madison Bridge, for you guys that don't recall, they had kept the piers of the original bridge, and they were going to shift new bridge that they were building on temporary piers. They were going to shift it, I think, about 55 feet or something like that, move it to the old location. Well, apparently, about 3 o'clock this morning, a steel bearing between the bridge and the pier dislodged. There was a construction worker hurt. They have shut the thing down. The fascinating thing to me here is nobody knows how it happened. It's obviously under investigation. But, you know, here this thing was actually going to, the bridge was actually going to close later this week so they could actually move the new bridge, a half-mile bridge, actually move the new bridge from the temporary supports onto the new reinforced piers. And they've already had a pier dislodged because of a steel bearing. Somebody explain that to me. And we want to trust these guys to build two new ones. They don't have a clue what they're doing on an overpriced situation. Ed?
Well, actually, on that bridge project, I think it's a pretty interesting engineering concept. And, you know, obviously they're getting it done faster than the Louisville got the bridges done. But,
yeah.
You know, this is fairly new. We don't have enough information on it. But, you know, like I say, that bridge project was soaring along. So, you know, it just really happened quickly and efficiently. So I'll wait to see what you know, see what happened with that. Accidents happen, and kind of an innovative project where you're basically moving a bridge, using old parts, you know, as a taxpayer, I'm good with that, you know,
right.
Trying to make it work with existing pieces. You know, sometimes accidents just happen. So, well, I'm going to wait that out and see what they come up with, you know, why it happened, exactly what happened, and we'll know, I'm sure.
Well, it's just fascinating to me that, you know, I know they're going to have to do all this research, but in the midst of all of this, you know, what happens when they go to move it a week from now? I mean, you know, thank God. I mean, I hate to hear anybody was hurt. And from what I understand, the one worker who was hurt is going to be okay. So they shut the project down immediately. But what's going to happen when they have to do the real work and move this thing 55 feet? Because that's a big concern for me. If you're going to have a steel bearing dislodged, somebody didn't dot the I's across the T's. And a project this size with so many lives at risk, because this is a dangerous job, it just kind of puzzled me, and I wanted to bring it up. And by the way, for Paul, for our good friend Paul, Chris, man, I, you know, he did work for the Courier, and I forgot all about it because I used to look at some of his articles. But he was with the Courier from 1998 to 2006. So I wanted to make sure to let them know that now. I just checked it out. But in other news, here we're back to ban the box. Yes, you guessed it. WFPL is where I got the story for this one. But, you know, the Louisville Metro Council Committee has approved a measure that would prohibit the city, any of their private contractors, from asking about an applicant's criminal history until the job is offered. That's what ban the box is, folks. You know, I myself think this is one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. Of course, the supporters are saying, well, people need a second chance. Nobody's going to argue with that. But I tell you, you know, if you're going to go to a guy and say, hey, I'm going to offer you a job, all right, oh, by the way, I'm going to do a criminal history check now. You know, you've already eliminated 100 people. You're offering this job to one person. You've narrowed down your hiring list. But out of those 99 people you get rid of, 50 of them can't pass a background check, including the one that you just talked to. Guess what? You just wasted time, money, and resources, have you not?
Yep. Yep. But, having hired people, there's sometimes there's giveaways to that, and it's not so much, you know, the conviction is not something I've worried about in the past. You know, as long as it wasn't for, you know, stealing or something, stealing out of a warehouse, it's like, okay, I don't have a problem with that.
Right.
But, you know, the thing is, and there really is in the private sector, there's strict limits on what you can ask people. You know, up to and including, you know, a pretest on a drug test, random drug testing, you mm-hmm. know, and sometimes you can only hope. It wouldn't be the first time that it's, you know, you think people would steer clear of it, but it does happen where people who have some inclination that they can't pass the test that you've informed them that they're going to have to take, you offer them a job, and then it doesn't work out.
Well, you know, and it's interesting.
I'm always one that tells, you know, we tell people straight up, it's like, you know, look, you will be drug tested, and, you know, and depending on your position, we'll do a background check on you. We might do a credit check on you. So,
right.
You know, we're up front, and again, you can't, if you're, there are ways of asking the question without asking the question, and generally, like when it comes to something like the drug test, it's like, you know, I'm not going to ask you if you do drugs or not. Test is going to reveal that, but I've been telling to look at people, say, you're not going to waste my $6, are you?
Well, it is fascinating, though, because look at people like John Flood, a convicted felon, a convicted thief, who was run out of a convicted perjurer, I mean, if you will. I mean, he took a plea deal so that he wouldn't be found guilty of perjury, lying on his application before. And then a year later, after letting him retire and avoid jail, then he gets rehired by IPL. But now this convicted thief, felon, and liar, Madonna Flood's husband, Councilwoman Madonna Flood's husband, John Flood, is working in Louisville Metro Accounting. So, you know, this is to keep people like that out, people like that in, I guess, because on his original application years ago, he had to define whether he had ever been convicted or anything else, and he lied on the application. Now, the second application that they used to rehire him didn't ask anything about his criminal history. Everybody in Metro government knew it, but it didn't matter. So they actually changed the application process for him. In the private sector, like you just pointed out, you know, in the private sector, you're not going to get hired without a background check. Let me tell you, folks, you know, I was illegally arrested in July of 2012. It was a bogus arrest. It was thrown out. The chief of police apologized profusely. His officers endangered my life when they had me in custody. The city had to settle on a lawsuit with me and mediate. You know, they did everything wrong you could possibly do. But they drug the case out for 16 months before they would expunge it. It didn't get expunged until November. They dragged this case out for 16 months. And what did that do? I had an open arrest on my record, and the charge was obstruction of government operations for asking a police officer his name, and I couldn't get hired through a temporary agency because my record came back with an open claim, and, of course, the claim was obstruction of government operations, so that tells the whole world you're a troublemaker, which I know it's hard to believe that I would be a troublemaker, but when you see it on paper, I guess it's true. You know, but it created all kinds of conflict for my family.
Well,
it put everything in.
Hey, lucky you, they don't have a charge exposure of government operations.
Yeah, really. You know, but it did. It's totally destroyed, you know, my family and everything else. I couldn't provide for my family for 16 months. You know, if you don't think that that's had an effect on my wife and my family's situation, you're wrong. But I'm going through hell now because of it. But this started over 16 months because of a background check. I couldn't even get hired at a temp agency. But yet Metro Louisville wants to go ahead and hire convicted felons and put them in the accounting department. And we don't have any problem with that as taxpayers. Go ahead, Ed.
We should. I mean, I'm all for restorative rights. But, you know, as I said, when it comes to what job we hire you for, that would absolutely, if you were – If it was an accounting or bookkeeping job where you had your fingers on my money, you know, with keystrokes and ink pens, you're probably not going to have a whole lot of luck getting employment with me if your criminal thing involved lying or stealing.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I could respect an accountant that got in a fight outside of a bar. You know, it happens, but. But, yeah, and it's just the same. If you have somebody, well, actually, if you have somebody prone to violence, you don't hire them. But, that's, to me, is mind-blowing that someone, especially considering government, considering how what a boondoggle it is every once in a while, I would have to think that if my expertise was in accounting and my inclination was to steal or lie, or, you know, or otherwise skim or, you know, scam, whatever, a government accounting job or having, you know, being able to move money around would seem to me to be like Winnie the Pooh and a pot of honey, man. It would just, I guess at some point you'd have to look at this situation and think this thing is so big and bloated and full of people playing the CYA game and everybody afraid to offend everybody else. It's like, man, this is fertile ground for a criminal.
Oh, there's no doubt about it, and that's exactly it. And I'll be honest with you, I'm kind of surprised because the Republicans are against it on the council, and Greg Fisher is actually siding with the Republicans, which really shocks me. But, you know, this thing has been...
out of respect for Fisher, he is a business person, and he runs a successful business, and he probably has the same perspective. You know, this is my business, this is my money. There's no way in the hell I'm going to let somebody get hold of that stuff and then have them not show up for a week and find out they're in the Caymans.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. But it's really fascinating because the council Democrats and all the community activists are saying that ban the box ordinance will help even the playing field for the residents who deserve a second chance and are seeking gainful employment. How does that level anything? If it gets to the point where they offer you the job, if you ban the box, they're allowed to do a background check after they offer you the job, you haven't leveled the playing field. You've wasted our time and our resources.
You're absolutely right. Like I say, there are questions you do not ask, and there are questions you kind of ask. And the question, basically, if I'm going to ask the city, are you going to, you know, are you going to waste my money? Their answer is yes. You're going to waste my money and waste my time because you're going to go through the whole process and you're going to get it backed up again if it doesn't work out. It's like, no, load right. that thing up on the front end. Maybe in state of policy that there are, you know, certain parameters on certain jobs. If you've been convicted of this kind of crime, you probably aren't, you know, you need not apply for this job. I mean, what next? Are we going to housing and urban development? Okay, so somebody's convicted of a hate crime. you know, it's like, please, don't waste our time, okay?
right.
If you... Yeah, so, or alcoholic beverage control, and you've been convicted of 7 DUIs, please, don't waste our time on the application. But the city's basically saying, hey, waste our time. We want to invest the full specter of time on this before we figure out we're not going to hire you. So let's just drag this out. Let's disappoint and make other people who are hard up for work in this crappy economy, let's let them wait maybe another 3, 4, 6 weeks before they get employed, because you know, we're going to go through with this, like we're actually going to hire you. And then the last minute, we're not going to do it. We're going to start the whole damn process all over again and drive all these other good people totally batshit crazy.
Well, there you go. That's exactly it. Speaking of time, we're going to take a quick break, folks. Come back. We're going to switch gears just a little bit. So stick around. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Ed Springer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. We'll be right back.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
And we are back. Yes, welcome back to the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MPM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. And I tell you, you know, as always, we've got so many things going on, but I do want to switch gears, you know, and we'll see where it goes from there. But interesting story yesterday, Ed, that I got a hold of. And, you know, our good friend, President Barack Obama, and our most wonderful national pastor, the Reverend Jeremiah Wright, you know, seem to have a few things in common, as we know by now. A federal jury on Friday convicted the daughter of the Reverend Jeremiah Wright of money laundering and making false statements. That's perjury, folks. In connection with the grant money she was given from the state of Illinois, she participated in a fraud scheme that was led by former Country Club Hills Police Chief Regina Evans. So here we've got two insiders playing with money. Cost the state about $30,000. Most of that money went into Regina Evans' bank account, and her and Jerry put it all together and had fun with it. Isn't this surprising? Should it be surprising? Why am I not surprised? Hello, Ed. Ed Martin. Ed Martin. Well, we appear to have lost Ed. Si, you're in the chat room. Are you still hearing me okay? Hopefully he can answer me in just a second. There's a little bit of a delay here. Let's try a couple of buttons. I'm not sure what's going on. Okay, apparently I'm going through fine. Our good friend Mr. Martin is not. Ed, are you with us? Well, I guess he had a problem. So somebody tell me. Ed should be joining us back in a minute. You know, the Reverend Jeremiah Wright, you know, I hate America. Barack Obama's past friend, you know, the guy who guided him in Christianity. Order, just like good old Chicago, is caught fraudulently using our tax money. So I thought that was a very good story to share with you guys. It shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. I certainly am not surprised by it. She chose to participate in it. She laundered the money, lied to law enforcement, lied to a federal grand jury. You don't lie to a federal grand jury, folks. That's no-no, right? And, you know, all these things are going on. So she's committed perjury, laundered money, fraud, you name it, with our tax money. And this is from the good Reverend Jeremiah Wright and his great friend Barack Obama. Go ahead, Ed.
Well, you know, I did read on that. And it's just, you asked me, it says, does it surprise me? It's like, oh, absolutely not. I mean, it's you know, like you said, it's preacher, big church.
Right.
Yeah, they often enough, they get, it's a child of an influential person. I mean, how many times do we see, you know, you can't touch me, I can do this because I'm special, you know, my dad's got
right.
a pull kind of thing. And it's Chicago. I mean, come on. This is the land of Blagojevich. This is the land of Jesse Jackson Jr.
Right.
No, this is hardly a surprise. I mean, this is what the, I think this is just what you do in Chicago. You know, everybody, I guess everybody must do it. And you just kind of hope you don't get caught.
Well, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. Our good friend Sizeris in the chat room says it's also the land of Capone, the land of Al Capone. So, yeah, you're right, Si.
Hey,
some things never change.
Come on. Capone shot straight with you, pun intended, okay? Capone is a criminal. He didn't try to act like a preacher's son. He didn't really, even when he was a social activist and put out soup lines, everybody knew why he was doing it. It was because he'd make everybody like him and nobody'd roll over on him. You know, you
sure.
spend money, you save your money on soup, you can gamble more. Hey, Capone
yeah.
was at least honest about the fact that he was dishonest.
You got to be in the chat room. Si's pointing out, you're absolutely right, Si. Capone acted like a politician. And that's exactly what you're saying, Ed, right? It's funny. And I tell you, you know, it's hilarious because we have other news. And the reason that I keep mentioning Jeremiah Wright in attachment to Barack Obama is because we also have one of my favorite conservative friends, Dr. Benjamin Carson. You know who Dr. Benjamin Carson is? He's an African-American
oh, yeah.
conservative leader. He's the former director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital. And guess what? This is coming from the U.S. Patriot. He and his family were targeted by the IRS because he made comments critical of Barack Obama. According to Dr. Carson, and this guy is legit, folks. He's not a liar or anything else. I mean, this guy has got a great reputation. But according to Dr. Carson, audits and other harassment began in May or June of 2013, shortly after a speech he made at the National Prayer Breakfast. Gradually, the harassment expanded to include his family members, his associates, and they went after any of his charitable endeavors. It's amazing that this can happen. The IRS investigated him. They wanted to look at his real estate holdings. They didn't find anything. Then they wanted to go back an entire year. Didn't find anything. Then they wanted to go back more. They didn't find anything. So after a few months of harassing him, going through all his stuff, you know, they didn't find anything. Then they went after his kids, his wife, after his friends, all his associates. You know, how do you get this? I mean, we now live in a Gestapo. That's truly it. We live in a Gestapo. Congress won't do their job because they're scared to. How do we stop this kind of behavior when the administration can use anything it wants to create that fear conflict inside of us?
Well, you know, I think in a way, Dr. Carson ought to view that as a compliment because, essentially, I mean, let's face it, the guy is a genius. Hey, what do you do for a living? I save children's lives operating on their brains. You know, he's a
right.
genius. He probably makes a good, honest living in the process of saving and improving lives. He's, mm-hmm. you know, that's pretty cut and dried. It's not like some slimy-ass banker who's cutting a deal, you know, or getting, you know, doing political favors. It's not like he's slimy out there as a contractor doing things to, you know, get loaded on bogus contracts. Not like he's Dan Feinstein's husband getting
right.
the exclusive on the real estate deal for all the, you know, $16 billion worth of post office. Not like he's doing that. So
right.
all you can do is just try to harass him. You know, you send your goons in because you can't stand toe-to-toe with him in a debate. You can't stand toe-to-toe with him in character. So you go after him that way and you try to find something. Yeah, whether you find it or not, you try to deliver a message because you can't hang with him on any other plateau, on any other level.
Right.
You can't hang with him. So you send your goons in to try and rattle him. Didn't work.
Well, and it's fascinating. I mean, you know, Carson told Newsmax this is the first time he's ever been audited by the IRS. And as far as his children go, he did say the agency targeted his kids, but he wouldn't go into too much detail about it because he said he was scared that the agency would expand their probe and even further and jeopardize more people and put them under a microscope for no reason. He also added that a charitable organization that he's involved with that aids inmates' children for the first time in recent years have now lost a $1 million annual grant from the Justice Department. Who runs the Justice Department and makes those decisions? Oh, that's right, Eric Holder. Eric Holder. That's the answer, folks. That's your daily double. So here you've got this. So now they're affecting charities, charitable organizations. They're taking money away from charities and everything else solely because Ben Carson put it like it was at a national prayer breakfast and Barack Obama didn't like it. That is pathetic, folks. This is a Gestapo. This is what they do. You want to know why Lois Lerner continues pleading the Fifth and refuses to talk? Because she's scared to talk. That's the way it is. And she's scared to talk
yeah.
because she talked to the Justice Department.
Because once she starts talking, yeah, somebody may drop the name Ben Carson if she ever comes off of the Fifth Amendment.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They're going to nail her to the cross. Interesting, too. Other national news, according to the Washington Times, Hillary Clinton had received about $608,000 in illegal funds. Even though Hillary promised that she had scrubbed all illegal cash contributions during her 2000 presidential campaign, prosecutors revealed on Monday that the mastermind of Mayor Vincent Gray's shadow campaign, who was very instrumental in Hillary Clinton's campaign bid, had also funneled about $608,000 into her campaign illegally. Jeff Thompson is the guy behind the scheme. He put those funds to a New York marketing executive, Troy White, who put street teams together to raise Hillary's visibility in what? Urban areas. What does it mean? Yep. He wanted to raise her visibility in the black areas, so he went out and put street teams out there, you know, like our Clarence Shanceys and our Denise Bentleys here, and basically paid off people. Troy White pled guilty to a misdemeanor, and Jeffrey Thompson, I guess, is the one that's on trial right now. But it's fascinating. Here's the person that the Democrats still want to be their number one pick for the 2016. So when it comes to the Clinton name, nothing changes there either, does it?
No. Well, you know, it's amazing to me. We're sitting here talking about illegal donations and things like that. And right off, nice segue, by the way, Ed, off of the Ben Carson thing. So you had a guy who's a great shooter, not involved in politics, being harassed, having his family harassed by the IRS. And then we've got the Clinton money machine, the Democrat money machine, doing illegal things with money. I mean, hell, for all we know, the money was ill-begotten on top of that. But as you were giving a synopsis on that, I did not hear the word audit.
You know, that's a good question. I didn't hear the word audit either. I didn't see the word audit in the article. Apparently, prosecutors are stating that Thompson used two firms, and the actual distribution was about $608,750, and they term it as excessive and unreported contributions that pay for campaign services, you know, on behalf of Hillary Clinton. So, you know, and of course Hillary Clinton's going to play dumb. Well, I never knew that. But yet she had went on record saying that she had completely scrubbed all illegal cash contributions that she had found. So there's no way she didn't know about that. What she did was send back $1,000 here, $1,000 there, I guess. I don't know. But the reason the segue is there is because guess who else benefited from Jeffrey Thompson? Why, our president, Barack Obama, received thousands of dollars in campaign contributions from Thompson. But trying to say that those donations are apparently legal, I wouldn't have a clue. I've seen the paperwork. So it's very interesting that this is continuing to go on. This is the Democratic machine in action.
They say they're legal, and I guess the lawyers are going to hang that out. But the question is where's the IRS on this? I mean, that's a lot of money. Maybe not in the political world. It's just a small percentage, but that's a lot of money. You got a lot of money changing hands, and basically what I'm hearing is it sounds like if it's untraceable and stuff, that sounds like cash. And the IRS tends to frown on people doing business with, you know, significant business with cash. So where the hell are they?
Well, you know, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. And, you know, it's just totally fascinating and mind-boggling that this continues to happen today. You know, started talking about it at the beginning of the show, a local issue like ban the box is going to make it easier make it harder for the government to weed out people that just shouldn't be working there because of convicted felons, you know, like John Flood, Councilwoman Madonna Flood's husband, who's a convicted thief working for Metro Government. And if you see all of these things that seem to have the most in common is, while the IRS is targeting these conservative groups, can you tell me one conservative group? Seriously, name one conservative group who's been brought up on charges of vote buying, illegal contributions, you know, multiple voting at multiple locations, all these different things. I can't think of one. If I'm wrong, folks, write to me and let me know. MyViewMatters@AOL.com. But I'm going to waste the time researching because I can't remember. Because all of these stories always come back to Democrats, and they continue getting elected even though they're the ones who are causing the problems and creating all these illegal situations. And it's just astonishing to me. It really is. And finally, I don't want to get one story in here before we have to get out of here. It's really interesting. I was reading up a bit more on this teen in New Jersey. Everybody knows about it by now. Rachel Canning, 18 years old, had left home, got angry at her parents, didn't want to live by the rules, left home and moved in with one of her friends and her parent. Well, it turns out that her parents, or her friend's parents, are the ones who are actually paying for the legal fees on behalf of Rick Canning, trying to sue her parents for child support. Turns out that these guys aren't really all these great people that everybody they want everybody to believe. Apparently, her friend's parents were allowing Rachel to get boozed up in their home. They allowed Rachel to throw ragers in her home, in their home, her and their daughter. And this has been going on since she was at least 15 years old. So, you know, we've got to really look at this. John Inglis, John Inglesino.
Hey, he deserves to be screwed up.
Yeah, there we go. John Inglesino is the guy who took Rachel Canning under his wing, so to say. But he was letting her get drunk on vodka in his township when she was 15, letting her do all this stuff. You know, and now Canning's out there living with this guy who basically made her a lush, and that's one of the problems that her parents had was her drinking and things like that. She had to stop. According to Rachel's dad, she was so hungover from one night of drinking over there that she had gotten sick all over the sidewalk and into a garbage can and everything else. You know, so these are the people she's living with now who have been illegally getting her drunk since she was 15. So it's just, I thought it's interesting, more stuff coming out that nobody knew about. This stuff had got reported late last week, and I missed it, so I apologize. It got out there Friday, but or it might have been Saturday, but it's interesting. And another thing that's interesting as well, according to the Daily Mail, there was a phone message left by Rachel Canning for her mom that got submitted to the court. The message, according to Judge Peter Boggart, he called the message vulgar and chastised Rachel Canning in court last week. And I'll read it to you, folks. This is what these parents had to put up with. You know, it says, "Hi, Mom. Just to let you know, you're a real effing winner, aren't you? You think you're so cool, and you think you caught me throwing up in the bathroom after eating an egg frittata. Sorry that you have problems now. You need to harp on mine because I didn't, and I actually took a shit, which I really just want to shit all over your face right now because it looks like that anyway. I effing hate you, and I've written you off, so don't talk to me. Don't do anything. I'm blocking you from just about everything. Have a nice life. Bye, Mom." This is the kid that left home at 18 and tried to sue her parents for child support. What the hell is going on with you?
Well, sounds kind of damning for a case anyway. I'm done with you. It's like, okay, so you're done. You know? Oh, wait, but now you want to do the child support thing. Now you want some money. But, you know, it happens. These kids nowadays, I personally, listening to the whole story, I have to wonder, A, how I got that far, and B, if I think, you know, this other parent, if you've got a minor daughter out there getting wiped out on alcohol, you got her getting so, you know, sick. Okay, I don't know about New Jersey, but in Kentucky, it's a crime to contribute to the delinquency or to serve minors alcohol like that. So did the parents ever grow a set and just, you know, say, you know, well, I'm going drinking here and screw you and all that? And like, oh,
right.
Damn, that was easy. It's like, you know, give her about 3 hours and then just call the popo on to that person and let them waltz on in the house and say, oh, look, it's you. You're serving alcohol to a minor. Damn.
Yeah.
I hate it when people catch you doing that, you know. But really, I mean, people were breaking the law, and the parents stood back and let it happen until it got to this point. Like I say, it turns out that the asshole who's funding this thing and encouraging this thing is a guy who was effectively breaking the law. So why didn't somebody bust his butt earlier on when they knew their daughter had a problem? Because you're talking about age 15. This is going on for at least 3 years. Surely somewhere in the 3 years, you could have caught this. You know, you knew when she was going over there. You knew who was serving it to her, and you didn't do a damn thing about it.
Well, you know, I wish I could sit here and say 100% I agree with you, and the only reason I can't say that because I would if this was all proven out that way. But, you know, when I was 15 years old, you know, 16 years old, if I wanted a party, I'd tell my dad, you know, I was going to come by his house, and I wouldn't be there. You know, they trusted me, so I would end up at a party somewhere else. You know what I mean? And you know, so I can see, I mean, maybe they did not know all of this until all of this started and they found out. I'm not saying that they didn't. I'm not thinking their situation here. But, you know, Canning's father is a retired police chief, you know, so he's got experience in that kind of stuff. So I wouldn't think that he would sit there. I mean, of course, you know, that she's living with her friend and her dad is one, a big, powerful attorney, John Inglesino. Maybe he just didn't want to take on the attorney. I don't know. But there's a lot to deal with, and I'll be quite honest with you. I think knowing all of this, that Inglesino should actually be brought up on ethics charges at the very least for committing an illegal, for doing something illegal in New Jersey. It is illegal to serve a minor. That's pretty just across the nation, especially under the age of 18 anywhere. But so I think Inglesino should be brought up on charges with the New Jersey Bar Association and be in some serious trouble for doing this. I also think that he should be able to be sued personally by Canning's parents, all the court costs, litigation costs, and everything else that they've done. I think that he should have personal responsibility here for this, because his behavior, an adult, his behavior helped lead to this. He contributed to it, and he did it all illegally. So there should be some repercussions. It's not a felon. It's not a felony, but it is an illegal thing, and that should bring some repercussions in his law practice. So I don't know what they're going to do, but I thought it was interesting. In the meantime, Ed, we have run out of time once again.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I just say closing thoughts. If I had an attorney, and this is just, a very narrow spectrum on closing thoughts. Usually we try to keep it broad, but I can tell you this. If I had an attorney who behaved like that outside of his professional life, I'd cut him loose so fast it'd make his head spin. And just be like, don't talk, and say, I'm going to sue you. I want all our paperwork. You can send it to this other firm, whatever. I don't do business with people like you.
Well, there you go. There you go. I think it's a pretty fascinating situation. I can't really say much to offset what you just did. But, folks, tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, Dale Dish will be here with me as usual. We will get into some more national issues, and who knows where that's going to go. In the meantime, you guys have a great night. Talk to you then. Thank you so much for listening. Take care.
All right. Have a good one, Ed.
You too, buddy.